You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
We are back for our sixth part in this series. Now, I have spoken to Polisario Front and heard at length about the fight for independence. I have also looked at why so much phosphate is used here and whether there are alternatives possible. I have managed to get a hold of someone from the New Zealand Fertiliser Quality Council, who is also a beef and sheep farmer, but that is a chat we will hear down the track, because today we have somebody from the Moroccan side of things. When I originally got in touch with Ravensdown last year, they put me onto a representative for OCP, who is the company Ravensdown and Balance Agri Nutrients buy phosphate from. The representative, who is a strategic communications specialist for Senate SHJ, explained that they couldn't speak on behalf of the company, but that they could help facilitate comment. He also said there was a delegation heading to New Zealand in February 2020 of some publicly elected Sahrawi politicians and the president of OCP's Phosbook Foundation, an NGO running a range of education, health, cultural, and economic development programs in what he called southern Morocco. Looking at the map, I saw that Bukhra mine is the mine in what I had understood to be the Western Sahara, where OCP, who sells to New Zealand, mines phosphate in order to sell on. The figures they gave me show the Bukhra mine makes up 2% of their phosphate reserves, and 75% of the employees of the mine are locals from that region. It also stated that 100% of the revenue made from the Phosbukhra mine is reinvested locally. We agreed that when the group came to New Zealand, we would set up a time to speak, and that we did. Originally, it was organised so that I would speak with Mbaka Boweda, who is a native of Southern Sahara and was elected last year as the president of the Guelmim Oud Noun region, the first woman in the country elected as a regional president. The Senate SHJ representative indicated she would be able to speak to the wider geopolitical issues of the region, as well as her own experiences in the area. On the day of the interview, however, we had to readjust as Boweda was not available, so instead I spoke with Haj Buha Zubir, the president of the Phosbukhra Foundation. At the start of the interview, it was pointed out that Haj Buha would not be able to speak to the wider geopolitical issues, so while she could talk in general terms, if it got too political, she would have to say that is a question for the government and not for OCP or the foundation. The representative of Senate SHJ stated they would remain on the line during the interview for, quote, any translation or language issues, end quote. I flag that here, as throughout the interview, the communications specialist has some input that provides wider context and information necessary to understand the issue. In any case, back to Haj Buha.
Hello, thank you very much for this interview. My name is Haj Buha Zubair. I am president of the Phosbukhra Foundation. Phosbukhra Foundation is a subsidiary of OCP Group in the south of Morocco.
Yes, thank you for coming on the show. In terms of Phosbukhra and OCP, could you just give a bit of an overview of what those organizations are?
Yeah, OCP Group is the largest company in terms of exporting phosphate. It's the first exporter of phosphate worldwide, of the phosphoric acid, and the second exporter of fertilizers. OCP is the 70% of international reserves worldwide. And OCP is the most engaged company in terms of sustainability in Morocco and in Africa and in the region. Phosbukhra is a subsidiary of OCP. It's based on this in the south, and that's where the mine of New Zealand comes from, the rock of New Zealand comes from. Phosbukhra was created by the Spanish early, and then after Morocco bought the shares of the Spanish because the company wasn't gaining any money. And then after, in 2008, it starts making some income. But no dividend is invested in the south. All the income is invested in the mother company. All the income is reinvested for the benefit of the population, and that's what our foundation is doing.
Right. So when you say the benefit of the population, what does that actually mean? What does that translate into?
For example, what we are doing is many sustainable programs for the people. We have been launching two learning centers We have been launching a laboratory of research and development for the population in agriculture, water and energy. We've been launching through the Learning Center. We've been training 15,000 people during the past years. And from these people, 75% found out positive outcome. We've been vaccinating 100,000 camel in the region because there is camel in the region. And we have been doing a lot of programs for the education. We have been giving scholarships, 157 scholarships for young people. We've been doing healthcare caravans, mobile hospitals. 60,000 people benefited from these hospitals. And we've been doing so many educational, cultural, social, and environmental programs for the benefit of the people. But last and but not not least, we're building a technopole in which there is university, center of industrial training, secondary school of excellence, and other infrastructure. So you cannot imagine the number and the huge programs we are launching. $2 billion programs are launched to extend the life of the mine through the industrial program, but also the ecosystem program that are for women and young people mainly, but also are benefiting for breeders and other categories of the population. So also, Fos Bucra is employing 75% of locals, whereas in the Spanish period, there were only 4% who were locals. So we are a very engaged company in terms of benefiting for local people.
So when, because forgive me, I've never been to this region in the world. So when you're talking about the population or the local people, I'm just confused as to which people you mean. Because are you talking about the refugees in Western Sahara or the population of Morocco?
Look, this region is so-called Western Sahara is normally three regions in the south, and in these regions, the majority of Sahrawi exists. And I am Sahrawi myself, and I'm born when the Spanish were there. And this region counts the majority because there is 500,000 people living there in this region. Our families are in the camps of Tindouf, but these are minority, and they are in Algerian territory. They are not in the Moroccan territory. So these people are in another country, and they are considered as refugees. So we are Sahrawi, all of us, but these people are our families and they are living in another country.
I see. So there is a separation of borders, essentially. So
yes.
when you're talking about the fact that your families are in these camps, though, is there not a concern that there should be care taken for your families as well?
When our families come to the region, we take care of them. We work with anyone. We are a very engaged company. We work with all Sahrawi people who come to the region, who are in the region. But when it comes to political issue, we're not concerned because our families, yes, these are families, but when they come, they are taken care of. Whereas where they are, we cannot go to them because there is borders and there is military and there is other things that are happening there. And we are a company. We work in the region where we are operating our mining operation.
But in terms of those things in place, those structures that obstruct you from going to see your family, those are there. Morocco has put those in place. Is that correct?
Sorry, this is kind of political question, and you know I cannot answer. Perhaps it could be better if we have someone from the politicians who can answer.
Okay, that's okay. That makes sense. I'm just trying to understand more the geography in terms of that. At this point, the OCP representative added some information, saying, quote, "There are three provinces or regions that make up southern Morocco. There's about 1 million people that live there. When the Spanish left in 1976 and the troubles occurred, a number of people ended up in the camps in Tindouf. The figures there are somewhere between 15 and 70,000 people. That's the one that Polisario claimed to represent. There is no restriction from people coming from the camps in Tindouf to Morocco from the Moroccan side. The restrictions are Algerian imposed. In fact, the president of one of the regions in the Dakhla region, the southernmost, is himself a Sahrawi that was a former resident of the Tindouf camps. The programs that they, the Fos Bucra Foundation, are involved in are predominantly for the people of southern Morocco, which is the area you call Western Sahara. There's almost 1 million people living there." End quote. At which point I then asked, Okay. I'll go back to the programs. I just on that point, when you say I call Western Sahara, my understanding is the International Court of Justice actually concluded that Morocco didn't have any claim to that territory. And the response was that was, quote, a political question once again that she's not going to answer. That's one of the points that is actually disputed. And the point that Haj Buha can talk to you about is that the UN actually promotes and encourages economic development and trade in the regions and provides guidelines for doing so. And in all of those guidelines, OCP meets and exceeds the requirements, end quote. And we return to the interview. That would be good to see in terms of how OCP does adhere to those guidelines, yeah.
I can tell you three main messages to maintain. First message is we are in conformity with the international law in terms of our trade with New Zealand. When it comes to trade with New Zealand, we are in conformity and we are exceeding the international standards in terms of respecting the corporate social responsibility.
Okay.
Second, we are benefiting to the local people. 75% of the workers are locals and the population at local level benefits from our programs and which we create change on a daily life of people. Third, we are sustainable and we're looking for the future in a very optimistic way because we consider it's very important to invest in environment and we have 99% of our electricity coming from the wind energy. Our water comes from desalination plants and we do some programs for waste treatment. And we're building a platform to extend the lifespan of the mine from 50 to 80 years. And we are in conformity with the sustainable programs that are done anytime, anywhere in the world, but we are even exceeding them. If you can come to the region and see these things, I consider that will be better because all the companies with whom we work in New Zealand visited the region and saw what we do, and they consider we are one of the rare companies in the world doing what we do because we reinvest, no dividend goes, we reinvest in people, reinvest the money locally, and we respect the rights of people to development.
No, thank you. And you're right. I'm in touch with Balance and Ravens down here, and they've offered to have those conversations as well. So I'm looking forward to that. On those three points, I'm also just curious as to what you think, right? So if the first one in terms of New Zealand, the trade and everything, be in compliance and all that sort of thing, I'm just wondering what you think about the fact that Australia, America, Canada, they've all stopped trading with Morocco.
You know, these are other stories. Sometimes it's commercial criteria of the companies that sometimes change. They change their business and they change their product, and it's nothing to do with the ongoing pressure on some activists who want just to shut the mine, shut the business in the region, and create the chaos for the people and no work, no jobs, no development, and no right to any economic life. Canada still trades some subsidiaries with us. There is no problem,
okay,
no issue on this regard. And New Zealand imports only last year 22% of our phosphate from the mine of Fosbukra. And the phosphate we send to New Zealand from Fosbukra is nothing regarding all 11 million tons that we export around the world. OCP Group is exporting 11 million tons of phosphate in the world. Fosbukra is exporting to New Zealand only 400,000 tons of the rock. So I guess the experience with New Zealand is something so strong, so historical, that it has nothing to do with any experience around with our clients. New Zealand has been, I was in the plane, I saw the grass growing, and I was telling, this is part of our history, of our land, and of our mine. So I am happy to see that we have a common relation that exists in 30 years. And this relation was a strong relation because there is sincere way of dealing, and there is a credible company, and there is interest in both sides. We are in a win-win situation. New Zealand is gaining because our mine is the most suitable mine for New Zealand farmers, And we are gaining a lot because the money that comes from New Zealand benefits to make change in the daily life of people.
The second point being how much you do for local people and the benefits of it. So I'm curious because obviously one of the main things you mentioned, Polisario Front, one of the demands I understand from the independence movement but also from Sahrawi people in refugee camps is that the independence referendum that was promised in 1991, they want this to go ahead. So I'm curious to understand whether you support that going ahead or not, given that if they had the opportunity to vote for Moroccan occupation to continue, then you know they would receive all these benefits that you're talking about.
Well, this is again a political question, I guess. I'll try to tell you just one thing. The elected people and the Sahrawi people and all the bodies that are representing the people, the chiefs of tribes, and United Nations itself are supportive to the autonomy plan. There is United Nations recognizes that the referendum could not happen, and now there is the project of the autonomy plan under the table, and the voice that is talking is not is only one voice. It's not all the people, all the Sahrawi people who are listened to here in New Zealand. I guess you are listening to just one side, and you should listen to the other side of the story and to the other voice that is the constituting the majority of the people of Sahara. And I guess there is a lot of misunderstanding regarding this issue. It's a political issue, and people who are engaged here are engaged in a political process which is under the auspices of United Nations. We have nothing to do as a company with this, and we try to focus on the daily life of people to make changes and to make it better life and to give them hope.
And in terms of you saying it's a political question, I just wonder, personally, would you support that referendum going ahead?
I guess I am supportive to autonomy plan because it's a win-win situation. No one will lose, and everyone will find it's because Sahrawi people who are living in the south are living in development. They were the least developed region in the past. They are now the best developed region at national level in terms of six SDGs. We are the first in class. And we consider all ourselves that our future is with Morocco, and we are supportive as a person. We are supportive to the autonomy plan. I consider this is a solution where everyone is winning. Referendum couldn't happen because parts of our families are not in the list, and parts of our families also were not recognized by the chiefs of tribes. That's the criteria that we're recognizing people, and it's for us. It's for you, even United Nations, impossible process after 13 years of dealing with it.
So what could Fosbukra or OCP do to support that process?
Fosbukra is not engaged at all in politics. We are a company. We try to do economic development, and we trade because we respect the human rights, and we try to help these people. And everything that is said and every protest is just to prevent people from their rights to development. And I guess the business and the trade with New Zealand is enabling considerable good for the people of the southern regions of Morocco. This is the message, and we are thankful enough to New Zealand for being part of our history of development, for being participating to this development. If any mine in the world shuts, if any people get unemployed, and if anyone find himself without any hope in the future, there will be no development, there will be no future, and there will be no life in the planet. So we consider we should all support anything that can enable the right people to access to their rights to development.
And in terms of accessing rights and autonomy, like you say, so I'm wondering, who owns OCP? Who is actually the person or the people that own this company and therefore are benefiting from the profit?
It's you're not talking about the mine, okay? Fosbukra. OCP Group is a public owned company with 7% owned by private sector, and it's acting as a company with its board and with its governance, and it's a private company. It's acting as a private company.
Okay, so in terms of, you're saying how people can access jobs through these mines and that sort of thing, how would it be that people in, like if we're talking about those that are looking for their independence and autonomy, how is it that they are able to access working on their own land or developing, like you say, to the point of actually owning their own mines or being in charge in that sense? At this point again, the representative added that he didn't think Haj Buha addressed part of my question, saying, quote, OCP is a very large company. It is a mixture of public and private ownership, but it's essentially a public company. Fosbukhra, the company, is a wholly owned OCP subsidiary set up to manage the mine in Bukhra, which is in the Sahara, the Western Sahara region or southern Morocco. The point Haj Buha made before was that the company was bought fully from the previous Spanish owners in 2002. It didn't start making a profit until 2008, and since 2008, all the profits have been returned to the region through the work of the Fosbukhra Foundation, which administers all those programs she was talking about before. End quote. To that, I ask, the entire profit goes back to the region. And the response was that, quote, when she talks about dividends, none of the profit from the organization goes back to the mothership, if you like. It all stays in the region. It's invested back in the region through those health, education, and welfare programs. The other point was that there are 1 million people that live in the three southern provinces. They all get to vote in local elections and elect their elected representatives, who are also recognised by the UN as spokespeople for the Sahrawi and have been present in the UN negotiations. So, Polisario is just one voice. It's the only voice we tend to hear down here, but it is only one voice and doesn't include people like the regional president and the council of chiefs and so forth, who are also recognised by the UN and who form part of the negotiations that happen from time to time on the subject. End quote. Right. Okay. Would you be able to send me those names, or like a list of those people? Because if there are multiple voices, that would be great for me to look into as well. The response from the representative was that he would see what he could do. Quote, once again, that's going into the realms of the political stuff. What I have got is a brochure that we've been giving some of the stakeholders we've been talking to that gives the top line facts. I didn't want to barge in, just a couple of things that weren't quite clear in that. End quote. No, that's great. And I probably shouldn't keep you guys for much longer. I guess it's great to hear this perspective, obviously, in what you guys are doing on the ground. I should say, I suppose, what brings you to New Zealand? Why is there a delegation in New Zealand?
First of all, what we do on the ground, we're very proud of it. I am very happy to be part of these things that are happening on the ground. I'm proud to be part of this group, which is very engaged. As a Sahrawi, I've been to MIT because the OCP group was sending some directors to MIT. So we're lucky to be in such an interesting group. For New Zealand, we are here to thank New Zealanders because you have been part of our history. And to tell you, we have a very nice story, common story to tell. There is a little bit of Morocco in every place in the country, in every land in the country. Why don't we just thank each other for what have been done during the past years and build a nice story to tell about our common relationship for 30 years? It's really something you can be proud of because you are making changes in the daily life of people. Mm. If we have this mind, there will be no development.
I guess
there will be no future. So 2,200 people working, 75% are locals. You are helping in making change in their daily life. I can see that this is huge and this is very, and you are making change also in the life of people surrounding the mine. 50 companies work with the mine, and these 50 companies recruit many more than 700 people. So can you imagine the changes we are operating? So we are thankful to New Zealand for their support. There is more we have in common than things that separates us. So we need to be aware of this common history and of its positive side, and we should look to this future with more than just small pressure coming from a paid group that is doing political, that is playing in a political agenda.
So I guess that, I mean, and what you're saying, right, is that there is this fringe group that is causing a rift between these two nations, which could have a beautiful story together. And I'm sure New Zealand would like to think that we are contributing positively to something, but we're also aware of the fact that there is a refugee camp which is in dire conditions, and our Prime Minister actually, before she was Prime Minister, has visited those camps. So it's kind of something that we can't just ignore that fact. And I'm wondering why, or whether it's something that you also think about as somebody who's feeling so grateful and also positive about the work that you do, which is incredible work. You know, why can't that be extended to people who are literally forced outside or removed from this place because of Morocco's invasion, is what it has been called, and an occupation. So yeah, I can't really just ignore the fact that there is a refugee camp there, and I'm wondering what it is that we can do to support them.
Look, I will not comment the Prime Minister position or issue. I guess we should do one thing. This is the only thing we should do in order to move forward. We, all of us New Zealanders and Moroccans and Sahrawi, should support the UN process, ongoing process. New Zealand cannot be the country who will solve the problems of the world. There is the United Nations, which is working on this issue. They are solving it. It's a political conflict, regional political conflict between two countries. So there is, if there is any solution that will come, it will come under the United Nations. As countries, this common story, history, should be a part of our common future also. So we should just build on it and start working on it and try to show the positive side of it, and not pay attention to any pressure coming, because these are one voice. This is not all the voices. It's one voice, and it's the smallest part of the people. It's not the biggest, it's not the majority, that's what I want to say.
Yes, yeah. But I guess it's still, there are still people that are in need, yeah.
We feel very supportive, really, to any situation of any person around the world who is needing any help. But we consider there is United Nations. We can do nothing to anyone who is not part of our territory, because it's another country. And we want to help. But when people come, they are helped. 10,000 people came to the region. They were helped by the government, and they are leading a very better life now.
So in terms of, because something else, I guess, that's similar to New Zealand in terms of the rights of Indigenous people, my understanding is that Sahrawi people are Indigenous to that land, and I don't really understand why they would want to go be part of another nation. Does that make sense?
No, it's nothing to do with this. I guess I will not comment this part because it's very political, and I guess after the record I can tell you more about this historical things to understand, because this question of Indigenous is really not the right question there.
Here, the representative added, quote, "I suppose the point is, and what Haj Buha won't tell you, is that she won't comment on any Indigenous questions of New Zealand, any more so than people here should be commenting on Indigenous issues there. They are very complex issues, and I think the point she made is that there is a UN process underway. New Zealand supports the UN, Morocco supports the UN, and that is a process they are actually promoting and pushing. There's another thing too, just a bit of history. Morocco did originally propose a referendum, and everybody abandoned the idea because it got too hard to decide who would be eligible to vote in it. The original suggestion was that the people that were on the Spanish list, i.e. who was registered in the region at the time that it was a Spanish colony, either that or who had been approved by the chief of tribes. The only trouble is that that excluded a lot of people. So subsequent to that, there was an autonomy plan suggested by Morocco, and that is currently what the UN is looking at. Just as an example, Haj Buha, who was born in Layoun, which is in what is called the Western Sahara, so she is Sahrawi, but half her family, who are also Sahrawi, is not included in the list and not eligible to vote. And some of her family is in Tindouf. So even the UN has basically conceded that the referendum is unworkable. So they've adopted the autonomy plan, which is also a suggestion by Morocco. The voices included in it are more than just Polisario. In the meantime, they have come up with a series of guidelines to promote economic development and trade, because one of the things they recognise is the importance of economic development and the right to economic development, and that people shouldn't be denied that while this process goes on. So they've developed a protocol and system for determining the rules of trade with those areas. Also, the EU has recently backed and promoted a series of trade agreements, specifically including products from Western Sahara, not just fertilizer, but fishing and agricultural products as well. End quote.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. Support 95 BFM with a B card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.